going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
With over 2,300 hotels across the U.S. and Canada, Best Western is perfect for our annual spring hiking trip. It feels a little like
Okay, back to the hotel. What a great day.
Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Good morning. Welcome to Leading Off with True Blue LA. It's Friday, August 5th. We're ending the week with a sort of another tribute to Vin Scully. I'm your host, Eric Steven. I forgot to mention that. The Dodgers are starting a homestand tonight. It's the first games at Dodger Stadium since Vin Scully died, and they're going to have a pregame ceremony on Friday. There will be lots of tears involved, I'm sure. The Dodgers started wearing a patch on their jersey that's a black circle that says Vin with a microphone on Wednesday. So I presume they're going to wear that for the rest of the year. But today I want to look back going into the weekend at a pair of Vin Scully firsts. So when he retired in 2016, he was only calling home games at that point in his career. Didn't travel. And his final Dodger Stadium call was Charlie Culberson's walk-off home run to win the NL West. It was a beautiful moment. All the Dodgers celebrated on the field. To start that game, every Dodger, as they went to home plate, backed out and tipped their helmet to Vin Scully in the press box. And it was very touching. Just a very emotional day. So that was his last home game, but the Dodgers still had a week left in the year. So they had already predetermined that Scully was going to make that one last road trip against the Giants, the last three games of the year. So he called those last three games on the road. Now, aside from the rivalry, there was more significance to this than just Dodgers-Giants. So the last game was Sunday, October 2nd. That marked the 80th anniversary of the first game that Scully could remember, the first baseball game he can remember sort of knowing about or seeing. He didn't watch it, but like this was game two of the World Series between the Yankees and the Giants at the Polo Grounds. Vin, who at that time was nearly 9 years old. This is from an interview, I believe, in 2016, talking about the significance of that date. He says, I went by a Chinese laundry and the window was in the line score of the World Series game. That would be October 2nd, 1936, and the Yankees beat up the Giants 18-4. As a little boy, my first reaction was, oh, the poor Giants. So that's like a classic Scully moment, too. Like, it really shows his empathy, which I think was one of the keys to making him a great broadcaster. Like, he didn't rip guys, right? I mean, not that a lot of broadcasters do, but, like, he truly did, like, try to find the best in people. And that sort of showed, right? It's we talked on the lineup podcast yesterday about him sort of always having a state of wonder and curiosity. And I think it goes a long way to extend that to, sort of being empathetic to what someone else is going through. But anyway, that game, oddly enough, an 18-4 defeat made Vin a Giants fan. We're going to look back at that game. Game 2 of the 1936 World Series. It was a marquee matchup. The Yankees, by this point, they no longer had Babe Ruth, with whom they won 4 World Series and were, contending every year. But they were still perpetually good. After winning the 1932 World Series, that was with Ruth, they finished second in the AL 3 years in a row. But they made it back to the World Series this year with the help of Joe DiMaggio, who was a rookie. At the time, the Giants were also very good. So Bill Terry, Giants manager, he had the impossible task of taking over for John McGraw, who was there for like three decades. But Terry won a World Series in his first year at the helm of the Giants, 1933. This year was the first of two World Series in a row between these teams. They also, in the 20s, met three consecutive times, 1921 to 23. The Giants won the first two of those, and the Yankees won in 1923. So they're doing this little streak here where they're playing every year again. The Giants won Game 1 behind Hall of Famer Carl Hubbell at the Polo Ground, so they're up 1-0. They go into Game 2, and as Vin alluded to, it was all Yankees, right? 18-4, it's nothing around that. The big innings were a 7-run third inning and a 6-run ninth. The 18 runs still stands as the World Series record for one game, for one team. All nine Yankee starters had at least one hit, which has happened 25 times in World Series history. I was actually surprised at how often that was. This was the fifth such occurrence, at this sort of early stage of baseball. The Yankees had nine different players score, which has only happened nine times in World Series history. This was the second time. The last team to score, have nine players score a run in a World Series game was the Dodgers in 2017 in Game 5 in Houston. For the life of me, I couldn't pull up the box score, so I'm not exactly sure how that ended. In 1936, back in Game 2 here, Yankees second baseman Tony Lazzari hit a grand slam in the third inning. It was just the second grand slam in World Series history. The first also involved the Dodgers in 1920. It was by Cleveland's Elmer Smith in Game 5 against Burley Grimes. And anytime I have a chance to bring up Burley Grimes, I'm going to do it. So I was very happy to find that sort of fun fact. Catcher Bill Dickey, like Lazzari, drove in five runs. He had two hits, including a three-run homer in the ninth. So as good as an 18-4 win was, it was still an even series. And then they're going on the road. It was a little, not quite the same series setup as before. Plus, the two teams were close. Not that that necessarily mattered. A lot of teams were relatively close with no teams like west of St. Louis. But this win, even the series 1-1. The Yankees did win the next two games at home, though, and then they ended up beating the Giants in six games. That Yankees team is considered arguably like the best sort of mini-dynasty in baseball history. They won four straight World Series. They, like, outscored teams by a ton every single year. It was just a dominant team, and this was the first. It marked the first time, the first baseball game that Vin Scully can remember. So that makes it cool, and we'll talk about another first for Vin Scully after this.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
So Vin was, you know, as we mentioned, a young lad in 1936. He's still very young in 1950. He's just 22. He's fresh out of Fordham University. He was hired by the Dodgers by broadcaster Red Barber to join Barber and Connie Desmond in the announcer's booth. And Scully's first game was April 18th, 1950. It was opening day for the Dodgers against the Phillies at Scheib Park in Philadelphia. I was trying to look up. There wasn't a ton of mention of Scully that I could find, leading up to this. But the Brooklyn papers, what I saw in a few instances, referred to him as Vince in a few articles leading into the season. Don Newcomb started for the Dodgers. This was his second year with them. Newcomb won 17 games in 1949 after joining the Dodgers from the Negro Leagues. He was an All-Star. We talked about this on a previous episode with the Dodgers hosting the All-Star game this year. They also hosted in 1949. It was the first MLB All-Star game that had any black players at all. And Newcomb was there. Roy Campanella was there. Jackie Robinson was there. Larry Doby was there for Cleveland. But yeah, in 1949, Newcomb was an All-Star. He was Rookie of the Year. He'd be an All-Star again in 1950 and 1951. He'd win 19 games in 1950, but not on this day, on opening day. The Phillies jumped on Newcomb and the Dodgers early. They scored two in the first, three in the second, two in the third. Kind of put this game away. They ended up leading 8-0 at one point. They won 9-1. Newcomb didn't last too long. He only faced eight batters. That's one of the things that, like, sort of old school baseball, there's the flip side. Like, you know, everyone used to pitch deep into games or whatever, but managers would also have a quick hook sometimes, and not that he didn't necessarily deserve it, but, like, you'd see a lot of guys pulled early, but also part of that was because they didn't always run out of available pitchers every day, so they had, like, sort of a long man to use in case of emergency or something like that. It's always interesting to see how, like, pitcher usage has sort of developed over the years. Not that it's, like, good or bad, it's just different, you know? So Newcomb only faced eight batters. He got three outs. He recorded four runs, so not a good start. Jack Hand of the Associated Press in his game story seemed very fixated on the fact that Don Newcomb was 6'4 and 220 pounds. This was part of the lead. Don Newcomb, jumbo-sized pitching ace of the favored Brooks, was knocked out of the box in the second inning. Later in the story, Jack Hand wrote, Newcomb had nothing but size at Scheib Park, where the youthful Phillies humbled Brooklyn behind Robin Roberts' seven-hit workout. So it seemed a little much there, laying it on a little thick. He mentioned the youthful Phillies, and that team was called the Whiz Kids, and they did, they were a very good team. They beat the Dodgers 9-1 in Vin Scully's first game. They won the pennant that year, but not without a fight from Brooklyn. The Dodgers trailed those Phillies by two games, heading into the final two games of the season at Ebbets Field. Brooklyn won the opener 7-3, setting up the final day of the season to decide the pennant, or at least force, if the Dodgers won, to force a three-game playoff. Sunday was Don Newcomb again versus Robin Roberts, both of them sitting on 19 wins. Both were brilliant. They allowed one run through nine innings, and of course, both stayed in the game. Roberts actually led off the 10th inning with a single off Newcomb to start the 10th. Eddie Waitkus did the same, and then Richie Ashburn sacrificed them to second and third, and then that brought up Dick Sisler, who hit a three-run home run off Newcomb, who finished the inning, and then the Dodgers couldn't score in the bottom of the frame. So they lost 4-1. The Phillies won the pennant, and it was sort of a heartbreaking loss. That year especially for Newcomb was sort of it was rough against the Phillies because he lost both the first and last game of the season, against Robin Roberts, and the Phillies only won the pennant by two games. So you turn one game around, you're at least in a playoff. So that had to be tough to sort of sit with. On the year, Newcomb faced the Phillies more than any other team. He started eight times against them. He was only 2-5 with a 4.40 ERA. Against everyone else, he was 17-6 with a 3.50 ERA. He was, he was great. Like, it just... Maybe not in these two games, but even though, Newcomb and the Dodgers lost in that opening game, it's still a cool game because it started it was momentous for the team, and baseball, really. It launched the glorious and wonderful career that lasted 67 years for one Vincent Edward Scully, or, some people called him Vince at the time, but obviously everyone knows him as Vin. What a wonderful career, and it had to start somewhere, and I hope you enjoyed this very brief sort of remembrance of a pair of firsts for Vin Scully. We'll miss him, and I'm glad you're listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend, everybody.